Tonight we have a couple of speakers, and a home group member will talk for 5 minutes on sponsorship, and we'll introduce the next speaker, and the next speaker will introduce the next speaker. But we have Kerry to talk for a few minutes on.
Hey, Kerry!
Hi, I'm Kerry. I'm an alcoholic. my sobriety date is, my last drink was January 7th, 2009. And since I moved up here, these guys had different ideas for me. And when I got off my psych meds, I have a new sobriety date now. It's October 28th, 2010. And I like to mention that because I'm really glad that, you know, someone had some ideas for me that I actually listened to. Because really up until that point, I was just kind of running off of my own ideas. You know, I'm going to talk a little bit about sponsorship because, you know, for so long I really had no clue what a sponsor was. And I'd say for a good 5 or 6 years, I had a whole cast of sponsors. Really, I just kind of used it, you know, as someone to call or someone to, you know, hang out with or just a friend to kind of have. And I remember picking my very first sponsor. You know, she was the girl in the meeting that was smiling, and it was, you know, like the little social butterfly running around to everybody, and I was like, oh, she looks nice. So I remember I went up to her and said, hey, you know, will you be my sponsor? It wasn't my idea at all. Like, it was actually another girl who told me, you need a sponsor to go through the book with. And I said, I had no idea what that meant. And so, you know, when I finally got the courage to ask that girl, I went to her and I said, listen, I've already started reading the book, and I'm already on step one. So can we just kind of get going with two here? You know, like, I had really good ideas at this point. And she's like, wow, okay, sure, you know. And she sat down with me and you know, kind of said, hey, you know, that's not really how this works. And I said, all right, I got to go. And, you know, that was really like the end of that bit of sobriety, you know, that lasted about a week. And, you know, fast forward like 5 to 6 years later while I was still out there and doing some more research, I finally found the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous again. And this time the circumstances were a little different, you know. And what happened was, this time I ended up homeless. And this time I really had no... my mind was blank, you know. I didn't have any ideas to go with. I didn't have any good ideas left, you know, because I had really proven to myself that up until then, like, whatever was in my head was just really not good at all. And I guess, like, you know, God was looking out for me then, you know. I didn't believe in him at that point, but, you know, he had some plans for me. And, you know, at that point, I still really wasn't willing, you know, to listen to anybody. I still didn't get the concept of a sponsor. I mean, what I've learned today is a sponsor is somebody who you can listen to, you know, who you're gonna, like, you know, turn over, get out of your own way and listen to one clear voice. You know, a little bit over a year ago when I got my first sponsor this time around, you know, I picked her because she seemed cool. You know, I went up to her, and a couple of days later, I found out she had a boyfriend. You know, they were so happy, and they were cute, and they were in love, and I was miserable, and I was like, this isn't going to work, you know, and I found somebody else, you know. And this woman was old, and every time I called her, she was, like, driving her car, and she was always talking to me about her cats while she's driving her car, and I'm like, I hate this lady, and I hate her cats, you know. At that point, I was living in a halfway house, and I was like, crazy, batshit crazy about, like, someone stealing my peanut butter, you know, and this woman's talking to me about her cats, you know, and she's like, I've been sober, you know, 20-some-odd years, and I'm just like, yeah, okay, you know, I cannot deal with this. So as I'm plowing through sponsors, you know, of course, blaming everybody else, but not even taking 1 second to look inside at the real issue of me, you know, God put someone in my path, and that's for sure, you know, and, what happened was, this woman was totally different than anyone I had met at this point. You know, she had really big, bright, shiny eyes. And I had heard this in the rooms before. Like, you're going to hear someone tell your story, and you're going to see people with the bright, shiny eyes. Talk to those people. I didn't see any of that for a really long time. You know, and like 6 months into my sobriety, I met a woman who, you know, she was willing to, like, sit down with me and go through the book with me. And that's what we did. That was my first experience with a sponsor. You know, but my biggest mistake was that I was still in control. You know, my biggest problem was that I still thought that, like, I could get sober how I wanted to get sober, you know, under my own terms and conditions, you know, and I could still do what I wanted to do because I had a sponsor and I went to meetings and I did all these things, but I was really still self-will run riot, you know, running all over South Florida, going to all kinds of meetings. At this point, you know, I was doing AA, NA, CA, but I was really busy. You know, I was like chairing meetings and I was setting up coffee and I was like, you know, everybody knew me. Yeah, but, you know, I was just, like, really hollow, and I wasn't getting honest with anybody, and I was just, you know, living this, like, in, like, a shell of a life, you know, and I wasn't getting honest, and I was not facing anything that was real, you know. I was just, like, a little butterfly buzzing around from, like, meeting to meeting, filling my time, you know, with commitments, you know. I wasn't focused, and I certainly wasn't honest, like I said, and what happened was I started... Over time, you know, I love this. My Jim always says this. You know, every time you can only go to a bar for so long and not drink. It's the same thing as, like, going to AA meetings and not working the steps. It's no good. It only works for so long, you know. And then what happens is the shit begins to hit the fan, and that's what happened. I slowly started unraveling, you know. I wasn't listening to my sponsor. I wasn't doing the damn thing she said. You know, at that point, her and I were buddies, you know. There was really no sponsoring going on, you know. And, I just got out of control, and finally what happened was she suggested that I talk to her sponsor, and I finally got connected with a group of AA, strong AA, up here in New Jersey with a sponsorship group, and I moved up here, and I just said, I'm out of here. I need something different. I need something real, and what these guys were doing, like, I believed in, you know, and I wanted to be on the front lines of AA with them because the stories I heard is that they are go, go, go nonstop every night of the week, and I needed that. You know, they were doing something real, and they were, you know, they were carrying a message. You know, they all had sponsors who have sponsors who have sponsors. They're all accountable to somebody. You know, I would call, like, crazy. I would be calling Jim from Florida, like, I don't know if I can do this. He's like, hold on. 10 minutes later, we get off the phone. I had, like, 3 or 4 different people from this group calling me, you know, talking me off the ledge, talking me through a situation. You know, I mean, I lived in South Florida for almost a year, and I didn't know anybody that would do something like that for me. You know, wouldn't tell me the truth about the situation, you know. Like, oh, come on, let's just go laugh it off, or let's go get coffee, or let's just go to a CA meeting, you know. I'm exaggerating, but, I had to do something different because I needed different results because my life just, I wasn't happy. I was miserable. And so I did. And I started following, I moved up here, and I started following direction from one clear voice. And it wasn't about making friends. That was made clear to me, real clear to me in the beginning. And, of course, I stomped my feet and sometimes still do about that. You know, it's about saving lives. You know, I took this AA thing really, really lightly, and I thought it was just like another event of my day. You know, and what it is, it's a way of life. You know, I really think it took, you know, me losing everything that I thought that I had, you know, and me to, you know, get out of my own way long enough and stop trying to control my life the way I thought it should be, you know, to kind of let God in and let God show me how I'm supposed to live my life the way He wants me to do it. And until I'm willing to, like, listen to one human voice, I don't stand a chance listening to God's voice. Because if I can't just say uncle to one person here and now, you know, I'm not going to be able to, like, imagine that it's God's voice. I'm going to think very quickly that my voice sounds a lot like God's, and I'll be running right back with my own ideas again. You know, so basically what I have to do, you know, is get honest and say the things that I'm terrified of. You know, talk about the fear that runs my life on a daily basis. And I didn't know about that. You know, I really didn't. I was like, I had no clue what a sponsor was. It's not someone that's going to, you know, like I hear all the time, micromanage my life. You know, but it's someone I can trust. You know, it's someone that's been through the steps. It's someone that's going to tell me the truth, whether it hurts my feelings or rips my soul apart, you know. My sponsor doesn't care if my feelings get hurt, you know. And that's all I wanted in the beginning was, like, a lot of people to be my friend, a lot of people to hold me when I'm crying and tell me it's going to be okay. But, you know, it's not going to be okay if I continue to do what I've always done. I've got to take new and different steps. You know, it's all about action. And it's definitely something I learned how to do is take action, you know. Step back. Step out of the box, you know, and just let God take over. Because when God's in charge, good things happen. When Carrie's in charge, it's a mess. And it's just amazing to me to be able to, like, turn my will and my life over to God. Because you know, I was never willing to do that before, you know. And once I said uncle to a human being, to a sponsor, you know, which is like, was the hardest thing for me to do, which I have to do on a daily basis several times a day. And it's really just amazing, you know, to watch the magic unfold. Like, when I do things that I've never done before, I see lots of different results. So thanks for letting me share. And at this time, I'd like to introduce Eric.
American and alcoholic. I have a sobriety date. It's August 3rd, 2006. And I go by other aliases, names as well. And, yep. I have a lot of nicknames, actually, from this group in particular. Anyways, what I'm supposed to do tonight, besides, you know, trying to feed my ego of any sort, is I'm supposed to carry a message of hope and recovery. And I'm supposed to tell you what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. And what it was like, you know, before I started drinking, before I had any consequences from drinking, before I even had the good consequences from drinking, you know, when I was sober, you know, when I was 6 years old, I noticed I was a little bit different than everyone else. You know, I seemed to have a really hard time of, like, trying to talk with other people. You know, I could never, like, really, like, open up my mouth and actually say the stuff that was going on in my head about, you know, what was going on with me. And I just had this really, and I don't know what it was, but, you know, looking back on it now, I know what it is now. You know, it's definitely some form of spiritual malady. But back then, you know, I had no clue what was my problem. You know, I thought I was going to grow out of it. You know, I thought eventually, you know, I'd grow up and, you know, I'd be able to talk to people normally and everything would be just fine. And the older I got, it seemed to get worse. You know, this fear that I had seemed to paralyze me even more the older I got. And what happened for me was, you know, as I got older, I grew up, you know, I'm just going to say this is, you know, I grew up in a very fortunate, you know, I was very fortunate growing up. You know, I had two loving parents who gave me everything I needed. Every opportunity I had, you know, I could pretty much do anything I really wanted to, you know, anything I aspired to, and not everyone has that, you know, is that fortunate. I look at that now, but, you know, I didn't see it that way at all, man. You know, I thought I was getting the short end of the stick, you know, because I thought, you know, because of where I was growing up and because of the fact my dad wasn't around, you know, a lot, you know, he'd work in Switzerland my whole entire life, you know. And since he wasn't around, I never learned how, that's the reason. That's my problem. That's why I can't talk. You know, that's it. You know, he's the real problem that I have. And I went with that for a while, and I just, man, I was not much of a social person growing up. I'm trying to think back. I'm recently doing another inventory, and I have all these memories of all these resentments I had of growing up, and it's it's quite an eye-opener, because I can only imagine see what my part is. I almost see it right now, but I don't really want to look at it just quite yet. And because a lot of my, like, causes, you know, growing up, I had a lot of people yelling at me. And no, remembering the way I acted when I was a little kid, you know, I've always been an attention seeker, you know, good or bad attention. You know, I wanted people to pay attention. You know, because I thought if people were, like, looking at me or, like, talking to me, you know, at least, you know, that might, I just won't feel so awkward anymore. And a lot of times what I would do is when someone would tell me not to do something, I would start teasing them about it. Like, what, don't touch this, don't touch this, don't touch this. And I do that constantly. And I it's funny, I still wondered why I got yelled at a lot. You know, and growing up, you know, I found out very early on that, you know, they tested me and they classified me, and I was in the special ed program, and that was a pride buster right from the get-go. And you know, and the thing was, I could have probably worked my way out of it if I'd actually studied and read books and, like, did stuff. You know, most of the time though, I was playing video games and doing whatever I wanted to do. And but the reason why I didn't want to, like, get out of these classes was I found out it's so much easier to cheat in these classes than, like, everyone else has it. You know. Because, you know, they gave me extra time, you know, and all this other stuff. And I took that all the way I could. And, you know, I'm kind of laughing right now because I used to think I was a nice kid. You know, that I was always honest and good and, wow, I'm just full of it, I guess. And anyways, I am an alcoholic, and I did drink. And I have no idea where I'm going with this one tonight. But you know, when by the time I was 13 years old, man, all this like nervousness, anxiety, and all this like my head was constantly going, "You're not good enough. You're gonna have to cheat. You just gotta play more video games. You gotta do this. Gotta do that." It's just like racing. And by the time I was 13, I was trying to be cool, like the years before, but I was 13 years old. It was there in the summertime, and I was hanging out with one of my cousins, and he was a cool kid. You know, he knew how to talk to girls. You know, he knew how to do this thing called life, and you could just tell because he was always happy, like running around. And even when he would get upset, he would be upset for a while, and then he would move on. When I would get upset, you know, I'd harbor it. I'd constantly think about it, or especially embarrassment. You know, I'd constantly focus on it over and over again. And you could tell just by looking at my cousin, he didn't carry this stuff with him. You know, he just moved on. And I've still yet to figure that out sometimes. And but I was hanging out with him, and he told me we were going to this party. And once he told me that we were going to this party, I started acting out who I was going to pretend to be at this party. And, you know, I figured since I know I wasn't that much of a talker and I was going to be paralyzed with fear about how to say stuff, you know, I was going to try to put on the fake, you know, appearance. I was a silent, tough guy. And the problem is I'm not tough, you know. But I am silent, and I can do that part very well. And I'm going to this party, and I'm trying to think of, like, at least something to talk with to these kids. And I'm just, like, so self-consumed about it, you know, trying to figure out, you know, what can I impress them with about myself. And there wasn't much at age 13. You know, I wasn't doing much. It's like, well, I beat this many video games, you know, that's about all I could talk about. And the thing was, those cool kids weren't playing video games as much as I was, so I wasn't going to talk about it. And I got to this party, and I was nervous beforehand, and when I walked in, I was shocked with fear. Like, I had, like, just fear just overwhelming me to the point where it was just like, I could barely say hi. And this kid that was hosting the party, he offers me a Heineken. I look at this Heineken beer, and it's this green bottle, and I'm looking around. Everyone has these green bottles around, and, you know, I see one kid sipping this green bottle, talking to girls, and he's all cool about it. And someone else in the corner over there is, you know, he's chugging it down, and everyone's, like, cheering him on. I'm like, okay, I guess this is what everyone does at parties. And I took a sip at it. And I took more like a swig, and I almost just spat it out right in front of this kid. Because it was horrible, it was disgusting, it was bitter, and it was just, oh, I hated the taste. It was just not, I was used to really sweet stuff. Like, I eat sugar, just plain sugar by itself. You know, I'm just used to sweets. So when I had this Heineken, man, I was just about to puke. You know, I just, ugh. And, I didn't want them to find out I was a dork right away, and back then I didn't have glasses, so I had a fighting chance. And you know, I kept on drinking this stuff, and at about, you know, a couple drinks in, you know, alcohol did something for me that it didn't do for everyone else at this party. And I didn't notice it back then, but looking back, I can say that for certain, because at about like 3, maybe 4 drinks, I noticed something completely different. I noticed how comfortable my seat was, and I found out chairs actually have a backrest to them where you can, like, lay back and, like, relax and, like, breathe. I'd never known about this before, you know. I was like, whoa. And I was like, it was like an innovation. And the next thing I know, I'm, like, talking to people. I'm having a great time, because all of a sudden, it's like, instead of being afraid of saying these embarrassing things, I'm just saying the embarrassing things. But, you know, it's just, and it's awesome for me. And what was really good was it was a good night. No one took too much offensive to what I said. And I woke up the next morning, and I didn't have any hangovers. And we were walking back to the house, and my cousin was talking to his friend. And in my mind, I was thinking, I have got to do this again. You know, I got to do this a lot more times. Because you know what? I passed out way too early on last night. You know, I got to figure out how to keep this thing going. You know, because I love that feeling. But I... And About a month later, exactly to the day, I was in an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting, and I'm looking around going, like, what the heck is going on here? I'm like, oh, oh my God. And I was sitting next to this other cousin of mine, and this other one, you know, he is a little bit crazy, to say the least. And he's a little bit uneasy, and he's very sporadic. Once he has an idea, you know, he just runs with it. I'm glad he never thought about robbing a bank or anything like that. You know, that would have been really scary for me. And, yeah, he just seemed to be very different. But at the same time, he told me the truth about a lot of things. And I went with him to this AA meeting, and I'm sitting next to him. I don't think I'm an alcoholic. I don't think I have a problem whatsoever. And after this AA meeting, I knew I didn't have a problem, at least in comparison to what these guys were talking about. Because these alcoholics I went to this meeting and were filled. This room was just filled with tough guys. You know, everyone was a lot tougher than me, and I just could not identify with these people. And at first I was right off the bat when the meeting started. I told myself I'm never coming back to this AA stuff again. This is like really stupid. You know, it's like, oh, I don't want to be here. You know, I'm afraid someone's gonna punch me. And, you know, it was very rowdy meeting, and these guys were wearing leather, and there was piercings and tattoos, and guys and girls were both like that, and I just was not comfortable. I was not comfortable. And I was afraid there was going to be, like, whips involved. I had no clue what was going on. I was just terrified. And so I'm, like, trying to figure out how I can get out of this place. And the thing was, my uncle drove us to the meeting, and it took us an hour to get to this meeting. So it was pointless to try to walk home, just because of the distance, and I didn't know where we were. So I had to stick it out for this AA meeting, and the meeting started up, and people were going around introducing themselves as alcoholics, and I didn't think I was an alcoholic, but much like everything else, you know, I am terrified of being judged. You know, I just want to be like everyone else. You know, I just want to blend in. I don't want any controversy. I don't want anything that, you know, makes anyone uneasy. You know, I don't want to draw any attention to myself. And what I did was I just practiced, you know, Eric alcoholic, Eric alcoholic, Eric alcoholic, and I was just like, oh, come on, Eric alcoholic, Eric. It's like, don't screw this one up, come on, it's a long walk home. I'm like, oh. It gets to me, and my high-pitched voice goes off, Eric alcoholic, and I felt like a loser, and I was like, oh my God, and it just kept on going. I was like, oh, okay, I made it through that. And we got, and shortly thereafter, everyone's like getting up and like, what's going on now? And people are going into different rooms, and my cousin's like, you want to go to the first, you know, first step meeting? I'm like, what are you talking? And he's like, just follow me. I'm like, all right. And we go into this room, and we're sitting around square tables, big blue books all over the place, and I'm just sitting down next to my cousin. And someone comes in with ashtrays. I'm like, what's going on here? And people started lining up cigarettes. I'm like, oh, you know, maybe this AA stuff isn't so bad after all. You know, maybe there is something to this AA thing. And I was 13 at the time, and I loved to smoke cigarettes, and it seemed like a perfect decoy or scapegoat for me to smoke as much cigarettes as I wanted to. And what happened was that I sat through the rest of the meeting, and I listened to what these people talked about, and I did not identify with these people at all. Because what I kept on hearing, and I think it was just because of what I was hearing at the time since I wasn't ready, was these people were talking about drinking and getting into trouble with the law. And that was not happening for me. I was drinking and having a great time, you know, just feeling like I was finally a part of something, you know. And I wasn't faking like I was a part of something. You know, I actually felt it. And when I was in this AA meeting, though, these guys were already a part of something, and they would drink, and they would lose that. I was like, that's not me at all. And some of these guys actually knew how to tell their stories. You know, these guys were, like, real tough guys, and they had a lot of lewd and cop stories, and some of these were really entertaining. It was kind of like listening to a cops episode. And, it kind of, like, became my entertainment for the night. And coupled with that, you know, I only went to AA meetings when I was hanging out with that cousin of mine, and the rest of the time I just did whatever I wanted to. And at that point, though, I talk about that first meeting a lot, because from that point on, it started to debate whether or not I was an alcoholic, and that like practically ruined most of my drinking, because I had to prove that I could drink normally. And the scary thing was, there's one or maybe one night that I did have a couple of drinks, and I held on to that excuse for a long time. And but what happened for me quickly, though, was after I went to this AA thing and I was doing this thing for a while, I just was, you know, 13, 14, 15, 16, you know, years old, you know, fast forwarded to, and it's no longer about, like, going to parties, hanging out with people, drinking. It's just, like, I'm trying to figure out the best way I can get alcohol. You know, the best way I can get some sort of substance to put in my body, because my state of being sober is getting worse. It's actually getting worse for me, and I'm, like, confused, because I thought, like, you know, I thought that there was seriously something wrong with me, and I guess I wasn't too far off with that, but, you know, I seriously thought there was something wrong with me, because I thought people got this way when they got to college, you know, and that's why everyone else drank in college. And, you know, I had this at a very young age, and, you know, my whole entire life people were talking about how mature I was, which I don't believe anymore. And, you know, I just basically lied to them all the time anyway, so. And what happened was I had to keep this front up that I was a good kid, that I was, everything was all right with me, because if I didn't, you know, I was going to end up like my cousin and have to go to those AA meetings for the rest of my life, and I didn't want that. Because the week before he went to this AA thing, he was in a lockdown hospital, and I was talking to him. He was talking about rushing the nurse and escaping, and I was like, I don't think you should do that. You know, you should try going out the window first. And, you know, I didn't want to end up being in the lockdown hospital or going to these AA meetings, because a lot of these people were not happy to be in AA, and I could tell just by, like, the vibe in the room. And what happened for me, you know, was I kept on trying to control and enjoy my drinking, and I couldn't, you know, because when I was trying to enjoy it, you know, there was hardly any control. You know, there was hardly any control whatsoever. You know, it's like I'm drinking some of this, doing some of that. And I'm waking up the next morning trying to figure out what happened. And after a while, I even stopped trying to figure out what happened. Because sometimes, for the most part, I never even noticed this back then, but I never really drank at parties that many times. You know, I just drank home alone by myself right from the word go. And I didn't think of anything that was wrong with that at all. You know, I never told any of my friends about it. And one time, this was actually kind of one of the turning points, because this is one of the, like, one of many things that started questioning me about my drinking was, well, there was other times when I'd wake up in the morning and people would be accusing me of going to the bathroom all over the place, and, you know, there's that, and there's times where it was like, I'm trying to figure out how to get up on the ceiling, and there's those times, but in other occasions was this other occasion, I don't know why it's coming to my head now, but was, I was drinking this one night. I just needed a couple of drinks just to get the edge off. You know, because I had all this, like, fear about school, and I don't know where I'm going in life. And, you know, it's like I'm in sophomore year, and I'm like, I just can't do this. I can't figure this out. I can't. If I just have a couple of drinks, I can think clearly. And I just had a couple of beers, you know, some new beer that I'd never tried before. It was like Sam Adams at that point. I don't know. And it was just beer. You know, it was just nothing at all. When I was 16 years old, beer wasn't that big of a deal. My mom would, like, let me drink beer in front of her. And I had a couple of drinks, and I said that's all I was going to have. And then I had the idea that just maybe one more just to, like, get this thirst out of my mouth. You know, this, you know, I'm getting a little bit of cotton mouth, and I just need just a little bit more, and then I'm just going to shut it down from that point on. And what happened was I woke up the next morning, I went to school, and went to high school, and it was Wednesday afternoon, so that meant I had math class this morning, and I went to my math class, and I'm sitting down in math class, and I'm holding my head, because my head's about to, like, burst open. I'm, like, in so much pain, and I like math, for one thing. I'm a huge dork when it comes to that. Not English or anything else, but math is my thing, and I'm sitting down, and my head's about to break, and this really good-looking girl, Jenna, I don't know why she even talked to me, but she was, like, going, like, what's wrong, you know, what's the matter? I'm like, oh, I just have a bit of a hangover, and she looks at me going, it's Wednesday, there was no parties last night, were you home drinking alone? Like, she gave me that look, like, what? And That started questioning my drinking from that point on. And it's not like I started getting sober at that point. It just like, it messed with my mind. Because I'm like, what? Even hot girls don't like me drinking during the day. I can't do anything right, man. And I figured I got to stop, you know, being honest with people about being hungover on Wednesdays. You know, I just got to stop doing about that. And I had a lot of good reasons at certain points in my life to stop drinking, you know. And for whatever reason, I know it now, but, you know, back then I couldn't figure out why. But, you know, I figured if I just found out, you know, why I want to drink so much, you know, then I won't want to drink. You know, it's like, well, I want to drink because I want to feel good. All right, so I just can't feel good for the rest of my life. That doesn't seem like fair. And it's like, okay, well, maybe if I know that I can't drink safely and I can't have one drink, then all I have to do is not drink. And I thought there was some sort of knowledge I had to get, you know, something to, like, finally click in my head in order to stop drinking like my cousin did. And because he said that he knows that if he drinks again, he was going to die. And I figured I had to figure that out. You know, I had to figure out, you know, if I drink again, I'm going to die. And I kept on telling myself that over and over and over again. But eventually, at some point or another, that noise in my head, coupled by this feeling of emptiness right here, right in the chest, would just drive me to just get some sort of comfort. And I'll start drinking again. And it's not because I didn't want to, or, you know, it's because I wanted to. It's just I needed to. And what ended up occurring was a lot of these failed attempts to get sober, you know, started having me think about different ways of different solutions. And not always on the bright side either. You know, it was not too many good ideas left. And but I ran off. I ran with all the good ones. You know, I tried to do well in school. You know, I tried to find, you know, the one, and I found her for a while. And I tried being cool by starting up a band. And yeah, I did all these things, and just to make my outsides good, just to fix this feeling on the inside. And what happened was I had all this stuff on the outside that I was trying to keep up. You know, I was trying to be friendly with all the band members, and I was trying to, you know, be good with a girlfriend, and I just hated myself still, sober. And it's like, what is going on? You know, I got all this stuff on the outside. I have all these things, and yet I'm still broken. And it's not like I walked into Alcoholics Anonymous a ray of sunshine and clear-headedness, but I came into Alcoholics Anonymous shortly thereafter because I wanted to kill myself, and I started getting a little bit closer and closer to doing it. And I'm not much of a tough guy. I'm a huge wimp when it comes to blood, so I was kind of trying to, like, kill myself by jumping off of something, and there's a lot of good places for me to go to. But the ironic thing is there's no cliffs in Summit, New Jersey, which just amazes me. And what happened was I found out I really didn't want to kill myself, but, you know, I figured I'd listen to my cousin about this AA thing and what he suggested to me to do, which I found out later on he's been suggesting to me every single year. He said, why don't you try getting a sponsor and actually doing this thing? And I was like, ow. It's like, ow, you don't have to be this mean about it. Gee, fine, I'll do that. And I ended up getting the sponsor. I mean, he wasn't a very nice guy to me. You know, he seemed nice at first, and he seemed like he knew what he was talking about. And right from after I got done talking with this guy, and I agreed that he was going to be my sponsor, he told me, like, my first direction. And my first direction was to read the doctor's opinion and call him up. It was just that simple, and I read the doctor's opinion, and that night I didn't have a better understanding. I didn't have a white light experience. I just read the dang doctor's opinion because I had no clue. I finally let myself think that I did not know about this AA thing. I did not let myself think I knew something about this thing. And I called this guy up, and he was like, okay, good, meet me at my home group tomorrow. Wear a shirt and tie. And I'm like... I seriously try to think of an answer to why I really wore a shirt and tie. You know, maybe it's because I was desperate. Maybe it was this, maybe that. But at the same time, I probably thought it was kind of like this chorus thing. You know, back in, like, elementary, middle school, and high school. So, you know, at concerts, you know, we would wear a shirt and tie. you know, out of respect and to look proper. And I thought that's what, you know, we were doing in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I, you know, that's kind of why I still do it today, though. And I had no clue what to expect at this AA meeting. And what I found were people actually happy to stay sober. You know, people bursting out laughing, like with the most annoying laughs, some of these people. And these guys were like enthusiastic, and I was just like, leave me alone, get away from me, stop asking me questions, you know, I'm scared. And it's just like, I did not feel comfortable because these guys were way too happy for me. And I'm more of a downer, you know. I can hang out with people that like talk about how much they hate themselves and how much they want to die. You know, I'm good with hanging out with those people, but give me next people that talk about wanting to live and all their goals and aspirations. I'm like, ugh, just kill me now. And it's funny because one of my sponsors seemed to fit me very perfectly in my sobriety because I ended up switching sponsors. Because my first sponsor said that if you stop doing these things and you'll start to drift away, and you'll eventually drink. And he started to drift away, and I don't know where he is. That's it. And very shortly thereafter, I ended up getting another sponsor. And very, you know, he did similar stuff to my first sponsor, and it was all based on principles. And it was based on the principles of just going through the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I looked at my inventory again. I added a couple of things and some current things in my inventory when I did it again. And I'm doing another one now because I switched sponsors yet again. And I just want to mention a couple more things. But you know, this AA thing, I didn't think the steps were the answer. I really didn't. You know, I didn't really have much faith in these steps. Because I heard these people talk about them, you know, going through the steps is going to make you do this, this, and this happen. And I'm like, I don't know about that. You know, and I'm more of a, you know, I want more like material things, you know. I want like a car, you know. I want to be able to do this. I want to do that. A girlfriend or something, you know. And but when I was going through the steps, it's like, this AA thing is not going to work for me. You know, I'm going to start drinking again. I'm going to be like that guy in the back row who hates AA and everyone in it and keeps on relapsing over and over again. And I was just like, I knew I was going to be that guy intuitively. And what happened was that kind of, I don't know if that fear got me to take action or the fact that I actually thought my sponsor was kind of like me got me to take more action. But for some reason, I just ended up taking the actions of going through the steps. And what happens for me was that I got the promises in the steps. And I was like, oh, I didn't even realize I was getting them. You know, and what drew me to the attention, though, was that people around me started shaping up a lot better. You know, well, people seemed to start treating me differently. And for one thing, you know, my mom was mentioning how I was actually bearable to be around. And, you know, because like I said, I was that kid that's like, what, don't do this, don't do this, don't do this. And I drove my mom nuts, man. I still do, but try not to do as much. And but what happened was it wasn't because, you know, the steps were easy to go through or anything like that. What made it easier for me to go through the steps was my sponsor gave me specific direction on them. You know, he showed me how to do a four-step. You know, he gave me an example of his on how to do this four-step thing. And he told me to write it in columns. You know, it was very specific, you know. And I followed them to the best of my ability, but I still think I have a lot of good ideas, even in sobriety. And I drifted away at certain areas, and those areas of my life didn't work out too well. You know? those didn't seem to end up the best. Didn't seem to quite go as planned, you know. And I went through the rest of the steps. And man, I was glad to feel at peace with myself, you know, and not hate myself so much anymore, not want to kill myself. And I started turning into one of those happy people in the meeting. And and I didn't even realize it at the time, but people were pointing that out to me, that I actually was happy to be, it looked like I was actually happy. And I didn't realize I like dragged around like this gloom and gloom around with me. I just thought that was all in my head, and I was doing the fake smile the whole entire time. Like I actually thought I had people fooled about it. Guess not. And because I started picking up that I wasn't fooling anyone too well, because my sponsor would start telling me things like I was selfish, and you could tell that he could tell when I wasn't doing too well because he'd tell me to take more action. You know, go help this guy. Go help that guy. And I'll never forget when my sponsor started having me try to work with, like, homeless people. And, oh, my goodness. I have a couple of stories of those I could go off about. But, you know, in general, what happened for me was the homeless people didn't even want to hear my story. So I had to buy them, like, meals in order for them to, like, sit down to listen to my story. And I was fortunate enough to be a spoiled little Ron brat, so I had money to do that. So I maybe that helped me stay alive. And what happened was... I actually started liking staying sober. You know, it was more than just, you know, staying sober to finish the video game or anything like that. What happened for me was, you know, only recently I've actually been drifting away from that stuff. And, man, I did not think this AA stuff was, like, meant for me at all. Because going back, you know, I thought an alcoholic was a person. When they start drinking, problems arise, they stop drinking, and everything's fine. I didn't know an alcoholic was a person who had an abnormal reaction to alcohol. You know, because, you know, I definitely had an abnormal reaction to alcohol the first night I drank. You know, when I had that good feeling to notice how comfortable my cushion was, you know, that's an abnormal reaction. It's not necessarily a bad reaction, but that's coupled with that phenomenon of craving in the big book, The Doctor's Opinion describes. And, man, it didn't seem like such a bad thing to have this phenomenon of craving when I was 13. Because being able to drink a lot more than the older kids was cool for a while, but when it got to the point where it's like I was the only one drinking by myself, it didn't matter how much I was drinking. And you know, I didn't know that was the only thing I needed to grasp onto. But that was one thing I grasped onto in my early sobriety. Because I had a little bit of debate whether or not I was an alcoholic until I got through the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I had that, like, I'm not too sure if I really want to jump in. I'm not really like you people, but when I started going through the steps and being sponsored, you know, and actually following my sponsor's direction, what happened was I stopped thinking about myself so much. And what happened was my ears started to perk up, and I started listening to speakers in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I heard them describe the way they felt on the inside. I'd never heard that before in AA before. I'm pretty sure people were talking about it, and I'm pretty sure at least people in Minnesota were, and I actually know so, because I've been fortunate enough to go back there and listen to people carry the message. But then again, I heard those same people complaining, and I don't say that to judge. I just say that to report, because, you know, I've heard that, and I've been on that point in my sobriety where I think I know what's best for me and what I think I need to do, and that my sponsor really doesn't seem to quite understand. You know, I'm still young. I need to go finish my schooling, and I need to spend more time, you know, doing this stuff, trying to have fun, you know, have somewhat of a life. You know, I deserve this. And I was doing that when I was about 2 years sober. And by the time I was two and a half years sober, I was dropping out of college. And because I just wasn't studying. I'm not disciplined enough of myself yet where I can sit down and study on my own, you know. And but I know with strong sponsorship that I can do that. And I was doing that for a while, but I decided and was like, you know what, I just need to have a little bit of fun here and there. And it happened very slowly. Looking back, it happened very slowly, bit by bit. I was like, no, I'm not going to listen to that. I'm not going to do that. And finally, it's just, only have 5 minutes left. Oop. Sorry, John. But I just pulled the Tommy D. Oh, man, I remember when I'd go on commitments with Tom as well. I'm just going to mention this real quick. Cause he would tell me, oh, don't worry, you're going to speak. And he would save, like, the last, like, 10 minutes and tells me to speak for 5 minutes at, like, Delaney Hall one time. And I remember not getting much out of the talk and feeling really judged and embarrassed. But fast forward like a year and a half, this guy came out. I was in the meeting. I was speaking at this meeting I didn't want to speak at. But my sponsor tells me just to show up, suit up and show up. And be there before time. You know, try to focus on helping someone else. And, you know, these very simple things. But I still don't want to be at this meeting. But I was like, okay, I just got to do this. And I showed up. And I told my story. And it was the worst talk ever. You know, stumbling over my words. I was so, like, trying to impress people at this meeting. And what ended up happening, though, was what saved me was after the meeting, this guy came up to me. He's like, I know you don't remember me, but I was in the crowd that night in Delaney Hall 1.5 years ago. I was like, holy shit. you know, I was like, whoa, maybe there is something to this stuff. And what actually got me to that point of 1.5 years, because I wasn't sticking around just being miserable through that time, was I actually had periods where I had connections with other people. You know, at first it was this connection that I had with my sponsor when he was telling me all his secrets. And I was able to let him know, like, how disgusting I was. And, he just laughed it off. You know, he didn't take him too seriously. It wasn't anything really too seriously at all. And what happened was, after I drew that connection, I was capable of telling someone else, and especially someone else that was hurting a lot. And I've been fortunate enough and privileged to have tried to take people through the steps and people who have been interested to go through the steps. Because not everyone wants to do this stuff, you know. Not a lot of people want to. And you know, what did happen was I got to connect with a lot of people by not telling them how well I was doing, not about all the great things Alcoholics Anonymous has done for me, but telling them all that sick stuff that I did when I was a kid, and all that embarrassing things that I was thinking of when I was sober. Not all day, you know. I had a couple of stories when I was drinking too, but that was like nothing. It's embarrassing to the stuff I'd done sober. And if it was not for strong sponsorship and having a sponsor, I would never been able to do that. And my sponsor is the only thing he's ever asked me is to pass this thing along. And when this wonderful development of not doing too well in college, what happened was I had to jump into this program once more again. Not because I wanted to, not because I thought it was a good idea, because my sponsor suggested it and my ass was on fire. And I ended up working with these two people from New York City, and they were nothing like me on the outside. Nothing in common. But I took these guys through the steps like my sponsor did. Nothing special, nothing unique, nothing glamorous about it at all. And I didn't have money to offer these guys, you know. They were homeless, but I couldn't pay them money to sit still. Instead, what I did was told them who I really was. And I showed them how to go through the steps. And I got to see these guys change. And, that is an awesome experience in itself. And with that, we're out of time. I'd like to thank you for helping me stay sober another day.
Thanks for coming out tonight, folks. We have a nice way of closing.